Appreciate the opportunity to come and kind of present the ornamental side of things. Just out of curiosity, and Jim Bethke, you don't need to answer this question. Who here knows where that poinsettia you're going to go buy when you get home, where that started from? Who here really knows the life cycle of a poinsettia plant? Raise your hand. All right. A couple people in the room, and some of them are ornamental people. When we're talking about pest management, and especially resistance management, that's a very important thing to know. Where are our ornamental plants coming from? A lot of times we talk about resistance management, and we talk about it being a very localized issue in terms of, well, you need to properly rotate or you're going to get a resistant insect. Or in cases, we did have an example of with the cabbage earlier moving from one greenhouse up. And that fit my talk exactly in terms of some localized movement. And then we definitely had the issue of Texas supplying moths to the rest of the country. And I appreciate Shelby for having that right before Texas presentation. But the ornamentals really brings in a different mode of thought in terms of how we need to be thinking about resistance management. Really, what we need to think of for growers is resistance may not be local. Just because a greenhouse grower has a resistance whitefly in their crop, it may not have been anything they did. It may have come in on the plant material they had. If we use poinsettias as an example, stock plant may have started in Guatemala, where they're producing basically the mother plants that take the cuttings off of. Those plants are then shipped to usually rooting stations, where they root the plants, and then from there they go to the grower that finishes them off. And depending on the finishers, there's some growers who may grow them partway and then ship them to another grower who finishes them off. So you could have 3 of the 4 different people that are handling that crop, all who are going to have no knowledge of what products were used on that plant at each of the individual stations. So if you're talking about trying to rotate, especially like a neonicotinoid, which is a systemic, which is going to hang with that plant, if you're trying to keep limited exposure and you don't know how many times that plant has been treated, you can end up with having some problems there. Okay. If we look at, that example with the poinsettias, that would be one. There's poinsettias that are coming out of Africa. They're coming out of all different parts of the world. If we look at, and this was on the web, so I was able to find where all of Ball had their rooting stations. If you go to Home Depot, Lowe's, your local garden center, and buy a perennial plant, pretty good chance that it may have be one of Ball's plants. Ball has, some of those stock plants may be in the U.S. Good chance those stock plants may have been overseas. They're going to come into one of these locations, represented by the dots. They're going to root them up, and then they're going to ship them off to growers to finish them off, and then they're going to go to your local retail stores. So as you can see, even those rooting stations, we have them scattered all over the U.S. And we talked about insect movement. A grower may be doing everything proper inside their facility, and depending on what ag you have around you, either at any of these stations, you also have that potential of a resistant insect moving into a crop and then being shipped out with it. So resistance necessarily isn't always the grower fault, and we'll have an issue with that with a Q biotype in a second. And Tim's not in the room. Oh, Tim is in the room. That's good. Back in 2005, we had a reality check with white flies. And in reality, this was probably the best thing that happened to the ornamental industry in a while, because it gave them a reality check in terms of how they needed to be properly managing pests. I'm sure most people are familiar with the Q biotype incident. That's been talked about a lot in a lot of different cropping systems. Tim was monitoring for insecticide resistance, and they're trying to make sure that in Arizona they don't develop resistance problems. Well, one of the things he does is they also monitor poinsettia plants at Christmas time in the stores, and he had brought he brought some white flies back, and they had some resistance issues, and they fortunately were thought to have them biotyped, and they came back as a new biotype that we did not have in the U.S. That we knew had major resistance issues associated with that biotype period. It wasn't like this individual was unique. But what's interesting, if we go back to where that biotype originated from, it's from the Iberian Peninsula. And we had the example of a one field where the grower was planting different time periods. Well, here's a case where you have miles upon miles of nothing but plastic greenhouses, mainly with vegetables in them. How do you do a resistance management program when you have that many different production systems? I guess you could say, all right, everybody, in January we're applying product A. In February you have to apply product B. That really the only way you could have a solid resistance management program, because you're going to have individuals that are going to be moving from greenhouse to the greenhouse. So that's just really scary when you look at that much protected agriculture in one area. Spain. And not that long ago, that was a desert. So, I mean, that was an area that was a very desert that has worked out well for growing lots of vegetables. And there's probably some ornamentals in there, but most of that is vegetable production. There was concern when the Q biotype came in, we really didn't know what it was going to do in the U.S. I mean, there was concern that it's going to move off those ornamentals and in the field production systems. The good news is it hasn't happened yet, and with making a concerted effort, the issues with the Q biotype have really slacked off. And as far as I know, we've had no interceptions this year at any of the diagnostic labs that are looking for it. So there's kind of a good news on there. But it's just kind of interesting to look at, you have an issue in this part of the country with a resistance management program that has basically spread through to Africa, problems in the Middle East, in Central America, and now in the U.S. The one thing that came out of that was everybody was concerned about a Q biotype being resistant. Well, on the ornamental side, we were more concerned with the B biotype becoming resistant, and we're starting to have more and more growers that were saying, we're going out there and putting that marathon out, and it's just not working as good as it used to. So it was, you must not have applied it correctly, or you overwatered and you leached it out, or we're coming up with reasons why the product wasn't working. And more recently, some researchers had started looking at resistance levels and seen, we're starting to see more of resistance starting to occur. We didn't have any all-out failures that I'm really aware of. So this really gave us a chance to really work with growers to get back to a solid resistance management plan. And I'll talk about that. I'm giving Lance Osborne's talk, two talks from now, and we'll talk about that there. That gave us a national effort to try to manage what was going on with whiteflies, whether they be B or Q biotype. We were kind of really looking at the two of them together. This gave us a great opportunity to work with the growers to clean up their situations. But more importantly, it really gave us an effort to work with the plant propagators offshore, because it really became a reality check to them. But what's really scary is if we think about resistance management, is that necessarily match our quarantine laws that we have regarding shipping insects into the country? This kind of ties together. If you tell a grower that's shipping in millions of poinsettia cuttings a year, you cannot have one whitefly on any of those poinsettia cuttings, what kind of insecticide pressure are they going to have to put on that plant material to keep an absolutely clean crop? So you have to balance, all right, what level of control do they need to do versus if they overdo it, then we're going to have product failure, which means the insects are going to be coming in on that plant material that have resistance. So it's kind of a fine line to walk. I was talking with a colleague from Israel, and she was saying right now her herb growers are having trouble shipping material into the U.S. that has predatory mites on it that are found in the United States. Homeland Security is saying, no, you cannot have absolutely any insect on those plants. I'm not sure if there's something political-wise going on, but I'm thinking, if we have the natural enemies, and they're documenting that we do have them, I'd rather have that than them sending a chili thrips over that is resistance or a chili thrips biotype that we don't have. So we kind of really need to, when we're saying, all right, we don't want any insects coming in, I think it's important to look at, okay, what type of an insect is it? Is it one that we have? But the issue coming in with the white flies, when the Q biotype was sent in, the growers didn't realize they had a different biotype. I think the assumption was it was our B biotype. It's the same one we've always been dealing with. So it's easy to say, well, we don't want any insects coming in. And if you would just say, okay, no ornamental movement, we're just going to shut it down, you can't send any ornamentals into the U.S. Well, we're too far along, I think, in terms of the international movement of plants for that to really be an effective strategy. And we send stuff to other countries too, so that would, there's negative impacts that would go all around. The one thing that we're really trying to get growers to do is when you're buying plant material from another grower, ask them what products they've applied. We're seeing this starting to be effective with plant growth regulators and pansies, because if you apply a plant growth regulator to a pansy when it's in a plug, and the grower bot gets those plugs and turns around and puts the same plant growth regulator on them, they're going to have really bad-looking pansies. So a lot of the companies are now starting to send their plant growth regulator records with the pansies. So we're trying to get them to take it one step further and let the growers know what products you applied, especially if they're systemic or going to be long residual type products. So that way the grower receiving those plants don't turn around and basically put the same products on, or let them know what's happening. In terms of saying, well, you know, the offshore propagators, they're really sloppy. Well, I mean, there are some fly-by-night operations out there, but for the most of the part, most of the offshore propagators are major companies that are very concerned about making sure that they have good quality products, and they don't want to go through a lot of grief. So there's been a lot of work between them and people in the United States. They've really improved their scouting to understand what they have at their facilities, trying to get better treatment programs in. And the other thing you got to think about is, depending where you are in the world, you have different products available. So they may not have as many options in some countries as we do here. And they've really stepped up the inspection program. And I believe this is Ecky's facility, where, I mean, they're making a major effort to have trained personnel to be able to look at those plants to try to ensure that we have clean whitefly coming in. Now, unfortunately, I guess it was 2 years ago, in August, when growers were getting their cuttings from some of the rooting stations, we had some growers that were opening up boxes and clouds of whiteflies were coming out. And I know of at least one example of somebody that was told, well, we're following proper pest management, we're not trying to get resistance. Well, no, there was a different issue there. Also know cases where growers opened up a box, one whitefly flew out, and they said, well, you know, we had a contaminated shipment here, we want it for free. Well, we need to balance that line in terms of what is acceptable, especially within the U.S., when we're moving plants around. Okay. I intentionally designed this not to take up the full time slot. I'm hoping to have some discussion, and there's a fair number of the people in the room that are just as equally qualified to give this. So if anybody wants to respond to any questions that gets asked, feel free to do so. I mean, Jim Bethke was gone down when the Q biotype issue came up. I mean, he went down to Central America looking to see what was going on in the facilities, trying to help with them. So we have a lot of knowledgeable people in the room. Do we have any questions? Yes.
Do you know how vegetables are treated in any way the same with regard to offshore sources of vegetables? Just like, you know?
In terms of cuttings or fruit?
Yeah, the plant.
The plant. Well, right now, anything that's coming in is basically a cutting. There's usually no soil associated with it. So I don't know if we have many vegetables that are coming in as cuttings. But that's an important question, because we're getting more and more pressure to be allowed to send plant material into the U.S. in soil. And that is really scary, because it's one thing looking at a cutting with a few leaves on it. When you have soil attached to it, how do you know what's in there? And on the insect side, it's one thing. On the pathology side, that's really scary if we're having soil shipped on plants. So kind of pay attention to what's going on. And if you see where it looks like that's trying to be pushed, I mean, let people know the scientific scariness of that. We don't know what's in soil. Yes?
Are there any companies that own everything from the source in Guatemala, let's say, to the delivery to loads in the United States?
Yes. I mean, I think Ecky's.
Do they do anything differently than the general situation?
Jim, you want to answer that since they're your grower?
I'm sorry.
Oh, the question is there a company that owns the whole process that starts in Guatemala and sells through to the retail store?
Not really.
Doesn't Ecky's do a little bit of finished sale?
No.
They've got it. Not at all? So yeah, usually, for the most part, it's somebody else who does the finishing step.
But the more there is a control over as many steps as possible, would you say there'd be better opportunities for improved hiring?
Yeah, I would say ideally if you had, yeah, from start to finish, but I have growers that they can't get the guy on this side of the operation and the guy on this side of the operation to follow the same procedure. So I think the more times you switch facilities, then you get different people involved, and ideally I think you could. And that was the one thing is Ecce's and the other poinsettia companies, when we developed these management guides, I mean, and as soon as the queue issue hit, I mean, we were flooding with issues. They were getting that information out to their customers. So they were letting them know what the situation was and what they should be doing. So the propagators are very concerned about making sure their customers are understanding what happens when you have a flare-up like this.
Can you say something that would make me optimistic?
What was that?
Can you say something that would make me optimistic?
That would make you optimistic?
It's a joke.
Oh, well, but in a way, I think the Q issue, it made this awareness to the growers. People now are starting to think about the subject. So I think it is, we're better than where we were probably 6 years ago. So I think people are starting to understand that movement. Yes?
One of the things you mentioned was, about Elmira, compared to whether you're organized against at least grade one insecticide 1 month, different insecticide a different month, that has been a very effective strategy. Resistance management in cotton strid, 1980s, 90s, diamondback moth resistance management in strid, where you set up block windows like that. What about it? Does anybody try that? What are your limitations?
I don't know. I mean, that was just a thought I had with having lunch with somebody yesterday, that would be an area that could make sense. I'm not really sure how they try to manage stuff over there, but that would, I would think anytime you have that big of an area, you almost have to take out the individual grower and think of it as an area. But yeah, I'm not sure how they try to handle stuff. But they have very few, they have very limited insecticides they can use over there too. That's part of the problem. Yes?
Just an example of fruit or cuttings coming from abroad to the U.S. There's one example where, strawberry cuttings grown in Canada in the summer, they're transported down to Florida in the fall. They get planted in the fall for the strawberry.
Oh, okay. Yes, Jared?
What areas in the world has cute biotech escaping the greenhouse? What's the laundry list of places where that's
It, the question was, what part of the areas have basically escaped from the greenhouse? I mean, we know areas where it's both in the greenhouse and in the field, but I don't know if you necessarily could say, like in Israel, was that an escape from the greenhouse, or?
Let me put this way. What areas of the world is Q biotech not in the greenhouse itself? What's the laundry list of places?
Kind of that Mediterranean area. Where else is it showing up, Tim? Anywhere in the field besides that?
Nowhere in Asia.
I don't think so. But the thing is, with the Q biotype, the B biotype will outcompete it usually if the two of them are put together. It's just mainly under that heavy chemical pressure that it seems to do better.
It is in Spain. Is it outside the greenhouse in Spain?
Yes.
It is.
But that's its natural area. So I mean, it's kind of like the greenhouse has showed up in the area where the white fly was found.
But it's just as resistant to Spain over the sea.
Oh yeah, I mean that's where the problem developed. Any other questions? All right, thank you very much.